So Bentley, why don't you tell us how you got your start in music?
Well, I mean, I always had a passion for music when ever since I was a kid. And by the time I was about 17, I'd quite diligently put away a lot of savings initially to travel the world. I wanted to spend 6 months traveling. And the notion crossed my mind that I can either spend that money there, or I can use it to live off while I try and get my music career started. And that's essentially the choice that I made, and I haven't really looked back since.
Now, I just saw your video for Rebellion, and it is like a post-apocalyptic masterpiece. I love it. I love the music.
Thank you.
I mean, the music just fits the video. The video just fits the music, and I mean, it is like a short film. What's the backstory on the video?
I mean, there really isn't that an in-depth a concept about it. If I'm being honest, it's not like we sat down and really thought this through in the context of the song. As an artist, I do tend to work quite visually. So if I'm working on a song, I'll be thinking of a certain visual concept or a particular color or something like that. So when I was working on The Rebellion, because it's such a fight song and such an anthem, we really needed something really visually impactful for the video. And for the longest time, I did have this post-apocalyptic image in my head while I was working on it, and in the between finishing it and starting shooting the video. And it was a case of talking to my team and saying, this is what I would like to do. Can we actually do it? Can we pull it off with the budget and the facilities that we have? And everyone was just like, oh, we'll try our best.
Well, you know what's so great about it is, you know, now that you tell me the limitations on the budget, I mean, it was cinematic.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I mean, you know how like some videos, like, see, I'm going to assume part of the backgrounds in the video are CGI because of the destruction that you see. You know, either that, or the UK's got a housing problem. You know, but
it's such high and low for those falling towers.
Well, I was going to suggest maybe, did you guys go to Detroit? You know, film it, but no, I mean, it's got a look to it that's realistic in a surrealistic sense. And you know, you can't really tell where the CGI ends and the reality begins on a lot of it. I mean, or any of it actually. And it's just got a flow to it. Who is responsible for that?
That was actually me. And I'm glad you said it so nicely as well, because I'm quite happy to own up to it.
Nice.
I mean, being an independent artist, you do learn that there are some elements, and it's particularly on certain projects, that it is better if you retain that level of control. And I mean, I did study video very briefly, and I also love doing, and I have shot videos for other bands as well, which is something I'm going to be doing more of next year. So with the Rebellion video in particular, I really did want to kind of push my boundaries and see what I could really achieve with just my existing skill set, and just in an effort to expand my knowledge a little bit. And everybody's really happy with it. The feedback we've had has been amazing, and I'm just really pleased that everybody kind of can see this crazy vision that I originally had to start with.
So with videography, then you're kind of self-taught.
Largely. Yeah, I mean, when I did study video, it was mostly in the context of TV, which it was completely useless to me at the time and has been since. But it gave me that little bit of as to what I could achieve if I applied video in another form. And it's just gone from there, really. If, as long as you have a vision, prepared to put work and the research in, you can generally pretty much achieve anything.
Yeah. And I don't know. I get the feeling now that you do what I do sometimes, because I have to do our videos a lot of the times. And what I'll do is, if I don't know how to do something, I'll go to YouTube and go, how to do, and then, you know, like, do that, and then, you know, do a, and then watch a tutorial on it. Because that's what's great about YouTube, is you can get a tutorial on anything.
Exactly. I mean, we're living in the information age, so it kind of flummoxes me when people say they don't know how to do something or they want to learn, and they haven't looked online yet, even if just as a basic introduction to launch off of, because there's so many insanely talented people that aren't recognized, and they're offering their knowledge and experience online, and quite often for free. So yeah, people just need to kind of get out there and start learning what it is they want to do.
Yeah, and then you can also, I mean, and you can go so far as to say, you know, like, how to do this in Premiere or After Effects, or, you know, or on a Mac. And I mean, you'll see it using the software that you have.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So exactly. Now, how did the song "The Rebellion" come about? Because I mean, it's thumping like you wouldn't believe. I mean, it's like one continuous hook.
It was actually the very, very first track I laid down for this album around this time last year, and it just came about. I just wrote it off the cuff about my frustrations with the mainstream industry, I guess, because there's a lot of opportunity and a lot of flourishment in the independent sectors of the music industry. But if you start working with the majors and start working with those levels of artists, then yeah, there's a lot to be frustrated about, if just to put it mildly. So yeah, the rebellion was basically me voicing my frustrations about that, and essentially how I want to go about my music as an independent artist. And that's probably where that defiant kind of call out anthem hook came from. And yeah, it's really interesting, because I had about three opportunities to try and come up with an alternative lead single for this album, and every single time, I mean, the songs that I was coming up with were really good and really hooky, and they were lead song material. But even if it took a few listens, everybody ended up going back to The Rebellion, the song that the very first song that I laid down. So that's how it ended up being the lead single and the title track as well.
Nice. Now, The Rebellion, the album, comes out November 6th. Are you one of those artists? Because you seem like you're very detailed with your work. So are you one of those artists that from now until November 6th, you're gonna think, I should have mixed that song different, I need to go back and do this, you know, are the CDs printed yet, because I want to go back and remaster the whole thing? And I mean, are you like that with your work?
You know what? I mean, I am, up until a certain point. I learned to get over that really, really quickly through, and that was through doing my remixes. Because the guys I was doing my remixes for at the time, I mean, obviously they've worked with hundreds of producers over their careers, and they refer to it as producer syndrome, which is exactly what you've just described. So they kind of helped me get over that very, very early on. So up until a point, I am constantly going back and changing songs and just fine tuning. But there's always a point with every single project that I work on where it's almost like I just cut it off. And after that point, I almost don't want anything to do with it anymore. And I think it's just the way you have to be. Otherwise, you would just drive yourself insane. I think it's really healthy to have that distance. Like right now, sometimes I go back and listen to my past projects, even stuff that I put out just last year. And I listen back to it and I think, yeah, you know what? I did a pretty good job on that. I'm happy with that. So yeah, it's just a learning curve, I guess.
So when you look back at your music in retrospect, the stuff that's already out, you know, you're pretty much happy with it. You don't pull a George Lucas and then like re-release everything and it's totally different, and you know.
I think everybody can learn from George Lucas.
Yeah, exactly. I think how many times has Star Wars come out and it's something different in it? I mean, it's like what, like 50 times now or something, and.
I know, I'm not a fan, but I've heard all of that. If for some reason I tend to surround myself with Star Wars fans, so I hear all about it from them. I love the idea of going back and revamping something, especially if you can bring something new to that song or that project that you couldn't do at the time. It's ironic that you've asked, because that's precisely what I'm planning to do with the bonus material that comes with the physical version of the new album. It's got to have a full of my previous songs completely reworked. But it's my personal belief, if you are going to go back and do that, you might as well do it in a way that is almost incomparable to the original, so that you're simply offering something new rather than trying to rewrite history.
Exactly, or at least a completely different take.
Yeah, exactly. The bonus material, it's fully orchestrated. We've got a full orchestra arrangement, and I mean that in itself obviously transforms the majority of the songs, and it's just really interesting, because obviously all of my writing has this really strong pop aspect. So the second that you try and put it into some sort of symphonic arrangement, it turns into this really interesting kind of hybrid concept, and I'm actually really excited about the bonus material right now.
Oh, I can imagine. Well, shifting gears a little bit, I've got to ask you, with your social media stats, I mean, you're just off the chain right now. I mean, and like if you remember history, Justin Bieber started out as a YouTube star, and you've got 14 million YouTube hits. I mean, would you consider yourself a YouTube star?
Oh, sorry. I think you cut out there.
Oh. Well, no. What I was asking was would you consider with 14 million YouTube views, would you consider yourself a YouTube star?
Oh God, no. I don't like that idea. It makes me comfortable when other people consider themselves stars or anything like that. I mean, obviously I'm eternally grateful that I'm a musician and people are listening to my stuff, and I have that opportunity for people to hear what I do. But yeah, no, I don't like this word star. It makes me really uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's, well, and also it is kind of dated, but I mean, you know, there's no other terminology for it, I guess. But I mean, look, The Rebellion, the official music video, is right now at this moment on the very precipice of hitting the 50,000 mark. It's right now, it's at like 49,520. So that means later today it will be 50,000.
Here's hoping. I think you just have to distance yourself from that, because as soon as you start buying into your own hype, then I think it's just the beginning of your demise, and you start taking yourself a bit too seriously. And I'm eternally grateful, but I just try not to think about numbers and figures, and I just concentrate on music.
Now, I've been interviewing a lot more people who like would actually call themselves YouTube stars, and one thing it's always puzzled me, like, can you monetize your YouTube channel to a point where you can make a living?
I'm not sure. From my experience, the majority of my income, I mean, it doesn't come from, And from my experience working in music, the majority of these YouTube stars, I guess, they get a lot of their followers and a lot of their hits from corporate backing. So to me, the second that you realize that, it loses that organic aspect. And the thing is with those kind of setups is that the money that you're putting in, it's quite difficult to kind of make that back and then make any kind of profit from it, unless you're taking taking profit from other areas like endorsements and things like that. So yeah, I think people need to be painfully aware of that, because it's a hell of a lot more common than people realize.
Yeah, and I've always been kind of baffled that some people put a lot of work into their videos, and I'm always wondering, I'm like, okay, how are they getting like the work they put in back? You know, the energy versus the money. You know,
exactly. But again, I mean, it's the beauty of being an independent artist, because you see what your money is being spent on. And in my setup, then we do everything that we possibly can with what we have. And I feel like we achieve a lot.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, I always get the feeling that doing something like that is like kind of like teetering on the fence, you know, like you can make it or you can't. But well, let's talk about when you were in Japan. I mean, you were signed when you were there.
Yeah. Well, I was actually signed before I'd ever gone out there. Which is it's kind of crazy in itself, I guess.
So how did that come about?
It's funny. As you can imagine, I get asked this story a lot, and there isn't that special of a story either. I was working with people in the UK at the time, and I had a little bit of experience working with Japanese composers on various projects, and that kind of introduced me to the Japanese industry kind of from a distance, but I was listening to Japanese music, and I loved what it was about, and I loved what the industry was doing at the time. So as soon as I finished my UK project at that point, I literally just put some phone calls in to the record labels over in Japan, and it was sense that I would just call up these managers and have these half-hour discussions with them, which is just unheard of in the music industry anywhere else in the world.
Oh, exactly. And
we just talked about my work and what I'd done in the past, and they literally went away for a couple of weeks. Three labels came back and said they wanted to do an album. And I decided to go with EMI Universal. And then I had to scramble to learn some Japanese before the album was released.
Wow. I mean, EMI Universal, I mean, that is huge. I mean, I can name a dozen artists that they've brought to the world, you know?
Yeah. It was a really good experience, and it was invaluable, really. And it's kind of interesting how things come full circle, because I'm actually back in touch with my old team at Universal right now. So it's kind of nice that like I say, it's like a bit of a family vibe, I guess. But I mean, even though I was working with a major, I was still essentially, the album was signed to the label. I wasn't. So I was still operating independently, which, if anything, it just makes me even more proud of what I managed to achieve in Japan.
Now let me ask you this, since you've been independent, you've been on a label, which do you prefer? I get all kinds of answers on that one, man.
I'm constantly working with labels when I'm producing for and writing for other artists. So I see the benefit both ways. At this very moment in time, there's not a lot that a record label could offer me that I couldn't do myself. And in areas can do better myself. It's not to sound arrogant, it's to realize the limitations of what a record label can do for you. Because a lot of unsigned acts, they think that a record deal is the holy grail and things like that, but they don't realize the pressures and strains on having a record deal, because the bigger company to, the bigger the numbers they expect from you. Like, you have to shift so many units, and then suddenly there's pressure. Whereas as an independent artist, like I say, it's, for me, it's always less about the numbers and more about just putting out the best possible work that I can at that moment. So so yeah, I'm certainly not downplaying record labels or working with a record label, being signed to one, but I think you've got to identify the advantages for you individually as an artist or a band.
Do you think that the labels, because I've always had this feeling about labels or major labels, is that they have this attitude that you're only as good as your last record?
I think that's changing. I mean, the industry right now, it is so much more advantageous to independent artists and independent labels. And I think the majors are slowly coming to terms with that. But I think you're right. I think there is still a certain degree of that kind of mentality. But at the end of the day, people have got to remember that record labels are businesses. So regardless of how big they are, they're, as a business, they are, their only concern is turnover and nothing more.
Exactly. Well, with the record industry changing, do you think the days of 12 million to 20 million plus selling albums are gone? Because I'm seeing like more and more major artists that have been around for decades that have gone diamond, a few times, and go platinum, and used to go platinum every time, now going silver and gold.
Of course. I mean, they're already gone as far as I see. And this is one of the problems with the major labels. They seem to be shooting themselves in the foot, is that they're constantly overinflating their sales figures. Because I mean, let's face it, if Katy Perry was really selling 4 million singles every time she puts anything out there, then the entire industry could survive on her catalog alone.
Exactly.
So people are under this impression that the music industry is fine and people are still buying legitimately millions and millions and millions of songs, when in actual fact, it's just not true. And with the major labels inflating the figures the way that they do, they're just perpetuating this myth so that it's more difficult for independent acts to break through and get any attention from people.
Well, what's funny is, they're inflating everything. I just saw a Yahoo article, what was it, a few months ago, where I won't mention the label, but they were busted buying YouTube likes and Twitter likes and Facebook likes for their artists.
Yeah. It's once again, like the corporate backing for the YouTube bloggers, it's more common than people realize. And I mean, it's a sad state of affairs. It really is, because you've got these songs that are supposedly huge worldwide smashes, and some of them, the majority of people don't actually like these songs, and they're genuinely not that popular. They're perpetuating this myth that they're selling millions and they're getting to number one. And if anything, it's just helped make the charts even less relevant. I actually don't know any independent act right now that has any concern about their chart position in any country and in any chart whatsoever. All they care about is their fans and their fans' reaction to the music.
Exactly. And another example, I guess you would say, would be U2's album that came out over a year ago. They gave out what was it? They gave everybody on iTunes a free copy of it, and the backlash was just enormous. And to be fair, it's not a bad album. It's not their best, but it's pretty good.
I think their mistake is that they didn't exactly give it to people. They kind of forced it on them.
Yeah, people woke up and it was on their phone.
I mean, I don't consider myself a U2 fan, so I mean, I wasn't aware of that album or anything about it. And yeah, I woke up one day and it was on my phone. And yeah, I can see why people got upset. Like, you can't force music onto people. It's just that, to be honest, I think that backlash was slightly deserved.
Well, and also too, they immediately turned right around and said, you know, and reported to RIAA that, you know, that there are 100 million copies of that album now out.
Exactly. It's again, it's a myth. It's smoke and mirrors, and it's always been that way. I mean, it's entertainment, so there is always a level of mystique and this theatricality that companies and managers like to put on. But I think it's gotten to the point where it's just so ridiculous, and it's so much talked about as well, that I mean, people are painfully aware that it's going on. So it's no longer a myth. It's no longer this facade that they're putting on. If anything, they're just kidding themselves.
Yeah. Now, I like some of the things you've done for promotion, because I mean, you basically like cater to not only your fans, but to people who could potentially be your fans. You know, like one thing I like that you did is that you released an EP that was actually called The Prequel. Which is basically the opening salvo for the rebellion, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll hold my hands up and say that was a strategic move, in the sense that the rebellion is the first independent album I've put out that I've had any kind of marketing campaign for, and to kind of so that we didn't have a cold start, we wanted to put The Prequel out. Particularly for the UK, which is where the campaign is based, because strangely enough, even though I'm from the UK, I've always lived in the UK, I actually don't have that much of a fan base here. All of my fans are like in the States or Japan, and really random places like Brazil and Russia. so yeah, we didn't want to start off cold, so we put The Prequel together, which was just three of my previous tracks and a brand new one for my existing fans, just so that the UK media and UK press kind of had a bit of more of a soft introduction to my work before we hit them with especially such a heavy album as The Rebellion as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, was that preconceived? I mean, was this conceived right alongside The Rebellion, or was it one of those things that developed in the back of your mind as the Rebellion was wrapping up?
It kind of developed. It was suggested to me. It hadn't even really crossed my mind. And when it was suggested, I thought it was a good idea, at the time. So, yeah. And plus it was a good opportunity to place the brand new track Disco Down. Cause otherwise, that song probably still wouldn't have been released at this point.
Well, now with The Rebellion, you really buckled down on this. I mean, from what I'm hearing, this is going to be a serious album compared to some of the stuff you've done in the past. Was this album hard to write?
Yeah, it was. I have talked about this, quite a lot, because I did approach it very, very differently, in the sense that I knew it was going to be promoted here. And at the same time, there was a big conflict going on, because I certainly didn't want to change myself, and I didn't want to change my sound just to kind of cater to a new market. But at the same time, I mean, I've grown up a little bit, and I knew this was an opportunity for me to really make a statement with my music and really kind of pour as much of myself into it as possible. So to do that, I really had to take myself out of my comfort zone and just write from a really raw and open and real place. So I feel like it's worked, because the people who have heard the album right now, their immediate reaction, I mean, one manager said that he felt like he'd learned everything he needed to know about Bentley Jones just from listening to this one album, which I feel like is a really nice way of summing it up, and it certainly validated all of my the hard work that I put into writing it.
Nice. Do you feel that this is, like, years later, that this album is going to be a milestone in your career?
I try not to think like that. I mean, obviously, I hope it is. And I hope that it is, it's a poignant album, and the message that I'm trying to make it gets across. But I mean, essentially, if it's successful and it's received that way, then it's just a bonus. Like I say, I try not to think too far ahead in the future. Otherwise, you can just completely psych yourself out of most things.
Yeah, yeah, or get stuck. You know.
Yeah, I mean, if you. Yeah, I mean, I've had those moments. I think everybody has. And I mean, if you actually sat down and thought about everything that you could be a potential concern, I don't think you'd move any further. You just have to put all that out of your mind and just try and be as fearless as you possibly can.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know what's funny? I used to think to myself, I wonder if that's why we never hear about Neil Armstrong anymore, because he spent the rest of his life going, first man on the moon, baby. You know, right here. You know? But it's possible. But the thing is, when I hear the song The Rebellion, you know, I could picture myself 20 years stumbling onto that song again and thinking, oh yeah, Bentley Jones, man, The Rebellion, you know, because it's got that staying power to it.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you think so.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and it actually makes me want to hear the rest of the album, which, if you know how picky I am, that's like a real compliment. So,
so all I can say is, yay, it worked.
Yeah, exactly. So, what do you have coming up? I mean, how do you move on from here? I mean, where do you see the evolution of your music going?
I'm in a really interesting state of a transition, I guess, right now, because I have this album coming out, and it does the reaction to it so far has been great. So right now I'm just, it's a case of picking what the right road is to go down, because I've got quite a lot of opportunities at my disposal. The one thing that I'm seriously chatting about is getting on the road and doing some shows here in the UK. It's just something that I haven't done before, and something, I mean, every artist, just all they want to do is just get up on a stage and sing. So that's at the top of the agenda. But I mean, at the same time, I'm kind of establishing this new model in the sense of running these campaigns to promote my albums. And I mean, if the Rebellion goes well, then it will kind of be a model for future albums that I'll just keep doing every single year until people stop listening to me.
Nice. And you seem to be really media savvy, not just with video, but with social media in general.
I think you have to be. I think it's dangerous for artists to leave certain aspects of their career to other people, because essentially you're not in control of your own fate. And especially when it comes to social media, it's such a brilliant gateway to directly interact with your fans. And I mean, I consider my fans my family. Like, and I know it sounds like a cliche because you hear it all the time, but it's honestly how I feel, because I'll wake up and I'll check my Twitter feed and I'll check my Facebook messages and I'll chat with them and ask them about how their day is. And we've gotten to know each other along this journey. So yeah, bands who don't control their own social media presence, just it baffles me why they wouldn't do that.
Yeah, well, and then, you know what's funny, you know what I really hate? I hate the ones that go on Twitter or Facebook that, you know, they don't have anything to say because they're still working on their album, so they'll just post a bunch of memes and a bunch of sayings from Keith Richards. You ever notice that? Or, you know, like, oh yeah, I'm gonna sound smart as hell, man, you know, because this is a quote from somebody else.
Yeah, I've come across a few accounts like that.
Yeah, I think almost every account's like that on Facebook at this point, so.
Yeah, again, Facebook is in this interesting transition because they're about to integrate a lot more video services to rival YouTube. So I think it's going to be interesting how Facebook plays out over the next 12 months.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think they're actually going to be a place where you can like rent movies and stuff now.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I've heard. Well, I've heard rumors. They're obviously not talking, but you know how YouTube has the video rental service now. I think they're going to tackle that.
Ah, interesting.
So yeah, exactly. But well, where can we find you online, Bentley? Because I mean, you're going to be just everywhere here in the next 6 months, man. So
yeah, we've got a busy time ahead. the first port of call is the official website, bentleyjones.com, and you can find pretty much everything you need there in terms of music and video. And then if you want to reach out to me and join some of the madness, then it's Bentley Jones Music on Facebook and YouTube, all one word, and Twitter is just Bentley_Jones.
And then of course, SoundCloud and everything else too. Right.
I tend to avoid SoundCloud, you know. SoundCloud, yeah, I don't like what SoundCloud has been doing for artists recently. And the fact that our Royalty Collection Society here in the UK is made the move to sue SoundCloud.
That's right.
5 years of unsuccessful negotiations because, well, basically they're refusing to pay artists what they deserve. So, yeah, I'm not a big fan of SoundCloud at all right now.
Wow. And you know, SoundCloud is actually Twitter. Did you know that?
Oh, really?
Yeah, but Twitter bought SoundCloud.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, Twitter bought SoundCloud 2 years ago. So
I should have known that.
Yeah, but no, I heard about that SoundCloud is getting sued for unpaid and underpaid royalties. So
yeah, it's absurd. I mean, especially when so many, being a leading media network, I should say, because I guess it's less of a social network. But being one of the forefront ones and not having that system implemented, I mean, like YouTube and Facebook and I mean, all the streaming services as well, they've been paying royalties for years now. And it almost seems arrogant that SoundCloud think that they can get away with it.
Yeah. Well, I call SoundCloud YouTube for blind people. So, but you're right though. And it, yeah, another thing I don't like is, okay, YouTube has security in place to where they can prevent, I mean, it doesn't always work, but they can prevent people from using third party applications to download the video, you know, or rip the audio into an MP3. SoundCloud, you can actually just go into source code and grab the MP3, you know, if you can read the code correctly, or you can just go to a number of websites and it will give you the 320 WAV file of that, of what's on SoundCloud.
Yeah, my phone pointed that out to me, which as you can imagine, just made me even more sour about SoundCloud. I certainly don't find it as interactive as YouTube, and I'm getting a firmer grasp on it where I might have neglected it earlier this year, but I'm certainly going to be a much more regular presence on YouTube over the next few months.